There's Lady M, there's Juliet, and there's Mama Rose and Gypsy. Those are the three. Those are the Holy Trinity.
Shakespeare, and Sondheim lyrics. I can handle that.
Yeah.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity. I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique because I do not care what normal people say. Hello and welcome back to Anomaly Supplemental. I'm Sue.
I'm Casey.
And today we're continuing with our series on Slings and Arrows.
Which, if you still haven't watched yet, I'm very disappointed in you.
Agreed.
And I expect comments by this third one that we're doing.
So I actually realized in editing the first episode that we really only talked about the very surface plot of season one.
We really did.
We talked about just Jeffrey and Oliver. And there's a storyline with the young actors, Kate and Jack. There's a storyline with Richard and Holly, who is a corporate sponsor. There's a storyline with Ellen. And then there are the characters of Anna and Maria and Nahum and Jerry, who becomes an important character in season two.
Mm-hmm.
And we just didn't mention them at all. And it's still, I said it last time, it amazes me how much there is in six episodes.
And I realized that, too, after listening to the podcast again. We touched on just enough of it to pique an interest, and there's just so much more. And again, they packed this all into 18 episodes. Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to cover a little bit more. Do you want to go a little more spoilery?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I mean, if our listening audience hasn't watched it by then, we might as well just tell them the story, right?
Yeah.
I was saying, I said on Twitter that I put in the DVD into my computer to try and grab some audio before we started recording and just put in episode one, but I wanted to record everything.
Yeah.
It's really not a dull moment. I kind of just want to play the episode for the podcast.
Once you start watching it, you just can't stop.
Maybe we should start at the beginning.
Yes, the very beginning.
So season two continues in following the senior company, the senior Shakespeare company at the New Burbage Festival. But the play that we're going to focus on this season, Casey might want to cover her ears.
La 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 la.
Is Macbeth.
Call me superstitious or cowardly or weak, but I'll never play a character whose name one dare not speak. I'll play Hamlet in doublet and hose or either of the Dromios, but sorry, I won't play Macbeth. I'll play Richard III with a hump and a wig or Henry VIII, that selfish pig, but sorry, I don't do Macbeth. Every soul that plays this role must injury or death. I'd rather sweep the bloody stage than ever do Macbeth. So give me Cleopatra, Romeo, Juliet, doesn't matter. I'll play them all for free. But I'd be crackers to take on Macbeth. You see, I'm scattered about the Scottish tragedy. Oh, I...
It's okay. I won't say it again.
It's become such a bad habit that I can't even say it. It's like how Angela can't say pleasure or taint.
Oh, I do have to brace myself a little bit before I said it. But at any rate, we come back and we're seeing the end of the run, the last performance of Hamlet from season one. What I found amazing, I was on the Wikipedia again, and it says that the season one, the last episode of season one, aired in early December 2003, and then the first episode of season two didn't air until June 27th, 2005.
Oh my gosh.
So that's 18 months later. And I don't know if they didn't get picked up, or if it played in the US first, or if they filmed straight through, or what, but it seemed really strange to me, and they got everybody back for one episode. You know, the character of Jack was back for one episode and Kate was back.
Yeah, I think that 2003 to 2005 span was probably around the time Rachel McAdams started to shoot up the Hollywood star scale, because that was around the time of Mean Girls and Stupid Notebook. And I think what they wanted to do was probably wait to get her back for at least one episode so that they could wrap up their storyline. That would make sense to me, because I know I hate those throwaway lines saying, oh, they went over here.
Right.
And then never talk about them again. So that's what I would like to believe. Anyway, what happens right after Hamlet ends, everyone's kind of celebrating, yay, Hamlet is over, woohoo! And Jeffrey runs into this older woman who is kind of creepy.
Moira!
It was cold in the theater again. I should have brought a blanket. But last time it was so hot.
Well, I'm sorry. Did you like the play?
I liked it well enough. It's Hamlet.
True.
I liked you didn't tart it up. Your Ophelia was good. So was the boy, the movie star, but both a little too pretty, if you ask me. The theater's no place for pretty faces.
I'll pass along the compliment.
Yes, I liked it well enough, but like I say, you can't go wrong with Hamlet. And now, Macbeth. That's another story. I'm interested to see what you do with that one.
What do you mean?
It's a puzzle for the best of them. Oliver was obsessed with it. He wrote reams of notes. He had a plan. But you're not Oliver.
No. And we're not doing Macbeth.
It's a trial by fire. I've seen men broken by that play. Oh, yes. I'm interested to see what you do with that one. One request. Put in an intermission. We're not animals.
We talk about the very strong similarities between plots, between Slings and Arrows and Shakespeare's works, and she takes on the role of the witches, and basically prophesizing that he is going to do the Scottish play in the season. And this is the first time he's ever heard of this. So it kind of takes on that supernatural element. Not particularly scary, but a little unsettling.
It's not in the season. He's planning to do Antony and Cleopatra. And he just kind of brushes this woman off and they go out to party. Mm-hmm. Or no, they don't yet. He goes to see Richard in the office, because with Richard's storyline from season one, the company has now lost their biggest sponsor, Cosmopolitan Lenstrex. So they're in financial crisis. Richard is trying to drink his troubles away. And that's when he says, oh, by the way, Jeffrey, there is some good news.
There's good news. Henry Breedlove is finally available.
What would he do exactly?
Macbeth.
Where?
Where? Here, at the Rose. Oliver always wanted it.
It's not in the season.
Well, cut something, you know, Antony and Cleopatra.
No!
No, Jeffrey, come on! This is good news! Henry's a major draw. Continue. Oliver always wanted him to play the part. He talked about it all the time. It would be a great tribute.
No! I am not doing Macbeth. It is an extraordinarily difficult play to stage effectively.
No, it's not.
I'm not talking to you.
No, come on. Oh, Jeffrey! Hey, this is good news!
Also, right after Hamlet, Ellen is in the middle of this, I wouldn't say a healthy relationship, as she is a cougar, but she's with this very sweet, I wouldn't say intelligent, but he's very sweet, and he proposes to her, and she says yes, but she also has unresolved feelings for Jeffrey. The thing that makes her change her mind is not only her feelings for Jeffrey, but she also finds out that he is directing Mackers, and she really wants to play Lady M, who is probably, like, the role all actresses go for.
Ellen goes and breaks up with Sloane,
yeah,
who was her fiancé and sends him off in a cab and comes back into Jeffrey and says, I just broke up with him for you, and you are going to direct me in this play. So that pretty much seals the deal, and Jeffrey gets up and announces it to the company, who are all celebrating together in this bar. And that's as far as we get in the first episode. The second one opens with my favorite character in the series, Anna. She has found all of Oliver's notes that he had made on macros over the years. And he had always wanted Henry Breedlove to play the part and had been making notes on it for years. So Anna walks into Jeffrey's office with a banker's box full of notes. And is so excited that she found it because they want it to be a tribute to Oliver that they're going to stage his play. And so she gives Jeffrey this box, and then she rolls in seven more full of notes. And that's when we first begin to realize how truly obsessed with Mackers Oliver was.
And to Oliver's credit, Mackers is my favorite Shakespeare play. But it's also slightly unsettling that he's so dedicated to a play that's basically full of evil and madness and basically a man turning into a monster. Mm-hmm. In a silly way, it's kind of what Oliver became. Because, you know, he didn't start off hating everybody and being a total jackass. He kind of turned into this tyrant somewhere along the line to the point where, to mess with Jeffrey, he slept with Ellen, even though he's gay. It's just this whole little power play to get these performances out of his actors and just to wreak havoc on everybody's lives. And it's very, very sad.
Yeah, and Jeffrey, in a way to avoid actually going through all of the notes, is looking around Oliver's old office and finds a videotape titled The King of New Burbage. And it's a little documentary on Oliver. He says at one point he's watching it with Nahum, who's kind of like the janitor, but more.
He's kind of this weird mix of janitor and kind of a security guard. He's actually one of my favorite characters in this season. Because whenever Mackers is mentioned around him, he turns to Jeffrey and he's just like, you are not doing that play.
It's an evil play.
I do not like that play. It teaches us nothing.
It teaches us about evil.
No. It shows us evil. It's a portrait of a psychopath. Where I come from in Nigeria, it is a familiar sight.
I've had my fill of psychopaths.
But Jeffrey tells Nahum that he's watched this 50 times. He's watched this video 50 times, and he's just in shock about how pompous and fake and everything Oliver is being. Still, while watching the tape, you're seeing Oliver only talk about how much he wants to stage the Scottish tragedy. So he finally starts giving in and going through all of these notes.
It's a very interesting concept because it's kind of a way to say these themes have not really gone away. War is basically in every era. Mm-hmm. And as well as, you know, ambition and what will we do to get to the top? Even though technically Mackers is considered a historical tragedy every now and then because it has some historical elements in it. But, oh, this is not a Shakespeare podcast. We need to keep talking about.
Right. Yeah. So while Jeffrey starts poring over these notes, Richard is trying to figure out how to fund the next season. And he realizes he has to basically beg from the Minister of Culture to fund the company. And they need $2.2 million.
To kind of make up for that, he decides to switch up the advertising campaign.
Yeah, he applies for a grant. It's a one-time loan for rebranding.
It can't really get worse than the company that Richard chooses, though, because he decides to go with a company called Froghammer. Remember my little tiny sentence in the show notes that says the series is not for anomalies in training because it has adult language and content? Just be aware that in episode 2, you're going to come across a very, very awkward moment when you are first introduced to the company of Froghammer. It is headed by a very, very strange little man named Sanjay. Geeks will know him as President Adar from BSG.
Richard dealing with Froghammer, it hits so close to home for me because I really did go through this terrible rebranding with a theater company. You know, I, in ticket services, was someone taking really angry phone calls from subscribers who hated the new campaign and wanted to cancel all of their subscriptions because of it. All that this marketing company is thinking about is reaching a new audience. And there are all these buzzwords that they just throw back and forth about marketing and theater marketing. And I watch this and it's hysterical because they take it to the extreme, but it's also so accurate that I want to bash my head into the wall.
Yeah. Speaking of new, they are also directing a production of Romeo and Juliet,
mm-hmm.
the new Burbage Theater Festival. And because Jeffrey has no problem saying Mackers, and the new director said it accidentally, she spins around 5 times on the stage, and then she falls down.
Into the audience.
And breaks her neck. And then she's replaced by Darren Nichols, who is our favorite.
Yeah, he has them in rehearsal reciting the lines flatly and staring out into the audience, and they can't look at each other or touch each other or actually perform these iconic roles.
Don't kiss each other. Don't touch each other. Only do what I tell you to do.
All that you've told us to do is to stare straight ahead and say the lines.
And why aren't you doing that?
Because it doesn't give us anything to play.
Exactly. I don't want you to play anything. Why can't you understand this? Romeo and Juliet are not real people or characters. They are signifiers.
They are not signifiers.
Yes, they are.
They are two young people who are desperately in love.
Stop speaking. Don't speak anymore. I don't want to hear anything come out of that mouth unless it is a line from the play spoken flatly and without emotion.
I hate this.
And I hate you.
Back in the senior company doing Mackers, Henry arrives. Henry Breedlove. And he is this stereotypical pompous jerk. Before their first reading, he's basically holding court with the rest of the company, telling stories of his adventures, and interrupts Jeffrey during the reading because he wants to recite the dagger speech. Even though Jeffrey's using Oliver's notes during the staging, he's fighting the direction, and he starts turning Ellen against Jeffrey when it actually comes to a head and they have a actual confrontation. He says to Jeffrey, I'm going to play this role, and I'm going to do it my way.
I will be playing this character my way. The way it should be done. The way I have done it 3 times before, successfully. And I suggest that you watch and learn, Jeffrey, because I will show you who he really is.
Jeffrey, in staging Oliver's play, realizes that he understands it, but he doesn't like it. So he starts putting his own twist on the direction, and it's basically collaborating with Oliver again. Oliver shows back up as a ghost, and they argue over the play, and they argue over the direction and the staging and the lighting. And Henry refuses to follow Jeffrey's direction, to go so far as the night of the first preview, preventing the other actors from following it by throwing props away and walking around to where he thinks his spot should be on stage instead of where he was directed to be. And Jeffrey gets so enraged with this that immediately after the first preview, he fires him. And the next night, Jerry goes on as the understudy.
There are people who train and train and train, and they think they're just so perfect. And then there's the guy who maybe is a dentist or just your average Joe, and they have to work so much harder. Jerry is just this average man, and I like the idea of someone like Jerry playing Mackers. Mm-hmm. It kind of universalizes the whole theme of, you know, how ambition can just take over.
Right. And Jeffrey's whole concept of the part is that he wants to humanize this character. He does that even more so by sending Jerry out on stage to play it during the second preview because he is completely unprepared because of all of the stuff going on in his personal life, his separation and fighting with his wife and everything that's going on, and a huge star coming in to play this part. As an understudy, you never think you're going to go on. So he didn't really spend the time to learn the lines to prepare to go on. The cast is helping him, and he's messing up lines, and he's nervous, and he's crazy. And that's kind of how the character is supposed to be. We're seeing him as, you know, he's not a king, he's a general. Mm-hmm. He's just this guy whose ambition is getting the better of him and who's really being controlled by his wife's ambition. Afterwards, Jerry's wife comes backstage and it's almost like they make up. Going on in that role probably saved his marriage that night.
Yeah. It's so, so cute. But then everyone is just like, he was good, but he's just not right for the role. And I totally disagree, but I guess they already went through that storyline in season one. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
And Richard is saying to Jeffrey, you know, we're in enough trouble as it is. We have everyone's returning their tickets because of our offensive advertising. The only reason that we're selling any tickets at all is because of Henry Breedlove. We need him in this show.
Jeffrey, the only reason that we're selling any tickets at all is because of Henry Breedlove.
He is defying my direction. He's in another play entirely, and he's infected the whole cast. Now, I know you're worried about your job.
Jeffrey, I'm worried about the future of the entire festival. Now, what is the point of putting on a play if no one comes to see it?
Which would you prefer? An empty house with a great play or a full house with a piece of garbage?
Garbage! Garbage! I want garbage!
Now Jeffrey has to basically fix everything between Darren Nichols directing his very, very abstract production of Romeo and Juliet without any feeling. He has to get Henry Breedlove back, but somehow managed to get an actual real performance out of him. He is living in the storage basement because Ellen breaks up with him because of stupid Henry Breedlove, convincing her that he's crazy.
Because of Oliver.
Yeah. And basically has to fix all of these problems, and he manages to do that.
Yeah, he has some kind of epiphany or something before the final episode of the season, and he is a man on a mission.
And good on him. That's actually one of my favorite parts of the series, because he, you know, cleans himself up, gels back his hair, is wearing nice clothes, and when he comes in, everybody just turns to him and they're looking at him like he's even more insane. Convinces Darren that he's on medication, and you only hear about how good an actor Jeffrey was in season one, but in season two you get to see it.
Yeah, it's so good. Staying on the Romeo and Juliet storyline, in their final rehearsal before opening, you see these actors, they're dressed as chess pieces, as yeah. the black and white for the Montague and the Capulet, and they're in cages, literally, like in cages shaped like clothing, facing the audience and flatly saying their lines. And the two characters, the young actors playing Romeo and Juliet,
yes,
kiss so, in front right. of everybody. So the audience is shocked, and that kind of shocks Darren, and he says, no, no, this is terrible.
I want to change everything. I want warm light. I want those balls deflated and removed. Did you hear that? Not a zombie! I have a soul I can feel. Take those cages off. Take those ridiculous chess pieces off your head.
I even made little geeky connections. Like, the girl who plays Sophie is actually the main actress on Warehouse 13 now.
So Jeffrey also has a plan to fix his production.
Basically, he does exactly what Henry Breedlove did, where Henry, you know, totally undermines and just throws props away. And he goes to Marie and just schemes.
Yeah, he holds a cast meeting right before opening that he doesn't tell Henry or Ellen about, and he adds a tree to the set so Henry can't stand where he normally stands, basically getting the rest of the cast to force him into following the direction that Jeffrey wants for this performance.
I made a few little changes. It's wall. This is where I enter. Not unless you have a chainsaw. Oh, you're trying to humiliate me, is that it? Believe me, what I'm trying to do has very little to do with you. What if I refuse to go on? Oh, come on, you've played this part three times to great acclaim. Surely you can handle a few last-minute changes. All right. Where the f*** have you got me? Follow me. Okay, you come off upstage left. Exit up right. No, that's not possible now.
There's a great honking flat there. Now just keep your eyes open, keep your ears open. You're going to be fine.
You are.
Cheer on.
And on opening night, there are people camping out in the parking lot, young people, because young people are very important for the theater, apparently. And it's a complete hit, and they absolutely love it.
It's something that would not happen in real life.
No.
But it is very, very interesting to see this goth guy who kind of looks like the son of Andre the Giant coming in and being like, I want to see Macbeth.
So somehow this terrible, terrible marketing from Froghammer actually worked.
And of course, this happens after Sandra ends up in prison for fraud and basically a lot of things that are illegal.
You lied to me.
I never lied to you.
You lied to me over and over and over.
I never lied
to you. No, you're lying right now. You're lying right now.
I never told you a single lie.
Oh, shut up. Shut up. You killed off the festival. We're ruined.
That is the language of defeat.
Yes, the language of defeat, because we're defeated.
Richard, let's not talk about business right now. It's obviously upsetting you. Take a breath. Come on. Just one. Richard, let me tell you a secret. I am having a fantastic life. Look at the dreams I've lived. I wanted to be a paramedic, so one day I climbed into an ambulance and I became one. I've been a freighter captain, a clown, and a lawyer all in 1 week. How did I do these things? I'll tell you. It's all a trick. All you have to do is believe in your dreams and they'll come true.
Sanjay, you're in jail.
Yes, yes, I'm in jail. That's old news already. Move on.
It's really like you are watching real life in a theater. A little satirized.
Yeah, of course. Because it's not funny if you actually go through the motions of an actual theater company.
No, it's not. I mean, he must have some serious theater experience to come up with all of this stuff. Because there's no question in my mind that there is some real non-profit theater experience somewhere in that creative team.
Yeah, I mean, here's how I know how they got through the whole theater thing. Because the three creators and also the writers of the series are Mark McKinney, Susan Coyne, who plays Anna, and Bob Martin, who was Terry in the first season. And he went on to be in the Drowsy Chaperone. And they were all in a theater company together. Or at least two out of three of them were. So there's totally a lot of theater experience based into this series, and they just hit all of the right notes.
The whole cast is really excellent. I don't think there's anybody who falls down on the job in this series.
Not at all.
And there are so many of them. I mean, you talk about shows with a large cast, but...
And they all get screen time, too.
Almost all of them get storylines.
Yeah.
Even if they're short ones or intertwined with another one, there's so much going on. So watch Slings and Arrows if you haven't yet.
Yes.
I know that Anne said she started.
Oh, good.
And
that's good.
She tweeted at me a couple days ago, and she said, I'm supposed to be sleeping, and I'm not, and I blame you. And then she tagged it Slings and Arrows. So I felt very proud.
Yes. I think we sparked some interest in some other friends of ours, like Meds, and Kenny's interested now after listening to the first podcast that we did. And Jen even mentioned maybe watching the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she would send us a comment of her reciting the Slings and Arrows monologue from Hamlet. And I don't think we've gotten that yet.
We have not.
We're calling her out on that.
So to send us those comments,
please send us comments at moregirlygeeks.com. And that's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Please send us emails, voice recordings. Tweets are also encouraged.
Mm-hmm. Tweet any of us individually, or you can tweet to @anomalypodcast. Or if you don't want to record on a computer and send an email, you can call us at 248-419-GEEK. That's 248-419-4335.
Also, blog comments are highly encouraged. I got some little check marks for interesting, but I don't think I got any comments, and that makes me sad for the show notes.
So I think that does it for season 2 of Slings and Arrows. We will be back for the third installment of Slings and Arrows, the third and final installment where the senior company is performing King Lear.
And there are new storylines. They actually cover a musical as well as King Lear. And I am looking forward to talking about Slings and Arrows season three. And I'm also very sad. Even though I'm very happy that it's able to wrap itself up in 18 episodes, I miss it.
I wish there was more of it. But after our third podcast on Slings and Arrows, we are planning to talk about Labyrinth. And Anne will join both of us, I think, for that next podcast. So that's Jim Henson's Labyrinth. Be excited for that. Yay!
That I am very excited for.
So if there are other suggestions, we have a lot of ideas. We have a Google Doc going between all of the anomalous staff with ideas being listed for these supplemental episodes. But if anybody out there has a suggestion for something shorter, I guess, something that you wouldn't necessarily hear on our mother podcast, let us know. Give us suggestions. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Any of us.
Yeah. In fact, there's a thread on the Anomaly Forum about that, like little suggestions for future podcasts. So if you want to come up with a suggestion for our mother podcast, also include one for Anomaly Supplemental.
That's it. I'm Sue.
I'm Casey.
And you've been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
Yes, you have.
Right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced.
Perhaps if you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. That's all one word. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. To meet other anomalies, please join the Anomaly forums. Click on the forum icon at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Oh, say that three times fast.
I've been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
I know. I didn't realize that you hadn't seen it, honey. I didn't mean to spoil it. Come here. Sorry about that.
Oi, Sunshine. Go to iTunes and leave them some bleeding feedback, or I'll break your bloody kneecaps. As you were.